Hello, podcasters!
It's time for today's podcast, and a good one. In fact, I don't even know where to start on this one. Well, we started with France, and France... Try being a businessman in France. If you think we're screwed up, try being a businessman in France. The story we lead with today is fantastic. We also talk about infanticide and the things that nobody in the media is talking about. Nick DiPaolo is on with us today. Very, very funny. We hired a couple of listeners to watch tonight's debate because, honestly, we just can't do it. We just can't do it anymore.
So, we have other things we're doing.
Yeah.
For the show tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be watching the NFL game to see if anyone kneels.
I'll be going to my son's school to parent-teacher meeting.
About education, because you're going to talk about
exactly
education.
Exactly right. That's what I'm going to do. Right. Also, probably, I think, the most important break that we have done on this show in I don't know how long. I have a feeling on this. It just kind of came out. And... It through a discussion with Stu, and it just feels absolutely right. How Donald Trump could lose the election if Warren becomes the candidate. It's
a horror show. It's basically
a
our version
show.
Of American Horror Story.
Yeah, it's a horror show, but you must listen to it. It's all on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Now, imagine you're coming home, Stu, and you're coming from a business trip. Okay, you went someplace and you were there on business, and you were like,
"Honey, damn this corporation! I broke my leg." And I was working.
And you're like, where? I mean, you're still, you work in an office. You sit behind it.
I broke my leg. And it was while I was on a business trip.
Okay.
Okay.
And then she found out that you were water skiing. What would your wife say?
And my business isn't
you're
selling
not,
water
you
skis.
Have nothing, your okay. business is what you do.
Okay.
And there were no cameras or anything else. You were just out on a boat with a group of people, hot people, water skiing.
Hot people. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
She may be a little suspicious that right. something else was going on.
Right. Mm-hmm. And would she say, really, that's the company's problem? Would she? You're like, the company. And did the company ask you to go water skiing?
No, it is my free time.
Yeah,
okay?
No.
No, she wouldn't. In France, here's what happened. An employee died on a business trip. And the family is suing the company. And the courts just ruled, yes, that is that's a responsibility of the company to make sure that their people are protected. Here's what happened. He was an employee that had a heart attack while having sex with a stranger in his hotel room. The firm...
My wife would have more of a problem with that than the water skiing.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to give you something so insane.
Right.
Okay. I mean, my wife would have a problem with the water skiing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody coming in and going,
and okay, I broke both my legs because we were having this crazy sex.
I don't think my wife would say okay.
No.
And she wouldn't say that damn company. She'd say, I'm leaving.
I'm glad,
right?
glad this happened to you.
Right. Mm-hmm. And now I only have to break two arms. Mm-hmm. I don't have to break all four limbs.
It saves me some
right?
time.
It saves me time, right? Mm-hmm. So the family said that they were entitled to compensation. Because that was a workplace injury. And so the company said, no, that's not a workplace injury. I don't know if you know, but he was in his hotel room at night. We had finished work. And he picked up a stranger in the bar. And it was so good, no offense to rub it in here, but it was so good that he had a heart attack during it.
Is it, well, I mean, I guess he wouldn't have been at that hotel if not for the work assignment.
Well, that's what the judge said.
Oh, my God.
That's what the judge said. The employer is responsible for any accident occurring during a business trip. He wouldn't have been there in a, quote, extramarital relationship with a perfect stranger had he not been asked to go on the business trip. Oh, my gosh.
That's amazing.
God bless America. If you think we're insane, we're not fully there yet.
You don't think that could happen in the United States?
No, please don't wreck. Don't.
I just, do I don't not, have, I do not on. Have a case to bring to I've you, but I can, we can look.
I've got the debate tonight. I'm trying to build myself up with a lot of hope and a lot of good things so I can watch the debate and last maybe 2 minutes before my head explodes.
I'll say, though, I think that it's a good idea to, if you're going to commit a crime in France, wait till you're on a business trip. Because, like, if you were to go and murder someone, wouldn't the company be responsible for that murder?
I didn't do it. I was on a business trip.
I was at a Quality Inn,
right?
And I just murdered somebody at the bar. But I mean, if I wasn't working for this company, I would never have been at the Quality Inn.
I robbed the bank, but I was only in town that one night because business told me to go there.
As long as you can show it's not premeditated, I think you're clear.
I think you are.
I like it.
It was, this bank was a total stranger to me. I'd never seen that bank before. Had no idea. Just an extramarital robbery with another bank.
If the debate moderator today were to say, if a person were to go and have sex on a trip, a business trip, who should be responsible? You have to believe at least 8 of the 10 people are saying it's the company's
fault. Who's
there
tonight? Who's there tonight? I will tell you exact number of how many people... How many people would say yes?
You have Joe Biden.
He would say, ooh, he's tough. Come back to him.
Okay. Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
Company's always at fault for everything.
Yes.
Elizabeth Warren.
Yes.
100%.
100%.
Pete Buttigieg.
Somehow or another, the banks would be involved if Elizabeth Warren was.
That's true.
Yeah.
The banks are always involved.
It would be the company, but really the companies were driven by the banks to do it.
Mm-hmm. Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah, I think he'd do it. But he'd put it in a way to where everybody would kind of go like, yeah, that's kind of common sense. That's just the average everyday Joe saying that.
You think? Because he's not, to me, average everyday Joe. He's like McKinsey consultant, right? Like he speaks in that way that we've been in those meetings before with like those high level consultants and they lay it all out and you're like, I don't think they said anything there. I don't think that, like that was a lot of syllables,
but
syllable to content ratio is very
right. I didn't say
strange.
He meant it. I said, I mean, that's what he's good at. He's good at just talking around things where you're like, I don't know. I don't know what he said, but I kind of feel good.
Kamala Harris.
She's in.
Bob Franco Rourke.
Oh my gosh. Oh, yes.
Yeah. He's in because Bob Frank is in ultimate campaign desperation mode and will say anything.
He might even
say the F-bomb on the stage tonight, I'll be shocked.
Is that not incredible?
I'll be shocked.
Dude, we got it. You can use the F-word. I mean,
they
what
all
is
love
the
it.
Deal?
They're all so proud of themselves when they can say, because Donald Trump in a private meeting said S-hole countries. And so now they all got to get to say the full word because it's news, in quotes. And so they all come out, you know, Donald Trump said, and he says the whole word.
No, but.
And then now Bob Frank is saying the F word everywhere.
Right.
Because he's so desperate for attention.
His Hispanic priest, Patrick O'Malley, Father Patrick O'Malley.
Oh, very Hispanic.
Very Hispanic. Mm-hmm. He's very upset that his young altar boy is using the F word like that.
Mm-hmm. And Patrick O'Malley created salsa verde, if I'm not mistaken.
Very Hispanic.
Very Hispanic. Triple Hispanic.
Yeah, yeah.
Trip-spanic.
Yeah.
Is his official term. How about Cory Booker?
Cory Booker.
Cory Booker's a pandering machine, so he's going to pander no matter what is said.
Yep, yep.
He actually was bashing Trump about the bill that they did together on on criminal justice reform. He's like, Chrissy Teigen, the model slash wife of someone who's accomplished things, wrote some really nasty thing with all sorts of swears and stuff at Donald Trump. He came out and he's like, another example of Donald Trump targeting minority women. It's like, wait a minute. She was calling him like all sorts of swears. And I don't even think he named her. She came back with some really like vile rant against her. And he's like, I'm on team Chrissy.
Oh, wait. Chrissy Teigen is now a victim of something?
Yes. Chrissy Teigen is apparently the victim. Her poor multi-million dollar status.
Really? And she's a minority?
I don't know. I honestly don't care.
I don't know why everyone else is so
obsessed with this. Like, who cares what her skin color is?
You're going to be saying, no, the company's not responsible for that extramarital affair heart attack.
So we have three more. I think we've named seven so far. Yep. So we have Julian Castro.
Yes.
Amy Klobuchar.
I don't even know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no idea. Not really relevant.
And Andrew Yang.
Yang would say no.
Yeah, probably.
Yang would say no.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think Biden would just, it would just have to look at everybody else. And if everybody else was saying yes, then he'd say yes.
And then he'd probably flub six, seven sentences in a row.
Yeah, he'd pronounce yes as, okay, I think that's a yes from Joe Biden. Yeah.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Pat is here from the Pat Gray Radio Roundup, otherwise known as Pat Gray Unleashed.
Point of personal privilege. He, him, his.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Pat is the host of that podcast, which you can hear live as he records it every morning, right before this one, or you can download it at your discretion. and you can find that wherever you get podcast or on blazetv.com. Pat.
Yes.
Let's talk about the craziness in Philadelphia.
Yeah. Philadelphia's acting police commissioner, people are calling for her to resign because 25 years ago, she wore a T-shirt.
She wore a T-shirt.
Here's what the T-shirt said. Are you ready for this?
Yeah. Now, she's the police commissioner.
The police commissioner in Philadelphia.
She wore a T-shirt.
And it said, LAPD, we treat you like a king. Of course, that's not funny at all.
No, it's not funny at all. No.
And
Rodney King.
Yes, yes.
Oh, I never thought of that.
Little double entendre, perhaps there.
Yeah.
So, and she came in.
She came in to work last week and was wearing that.
No. A photo surfaced of her from 25 years ago. She had the T-shirt on. And now she, you know, they're demanding that she resign because of it. I mean, you're not going to be able to. You better start deleting your Twitter feed right now.
Our kids are doomed.
No Facebook pages. Be careful of your wardrobe. I mean, yeah, our kids are going to be.
Our kids are.
Look at what people say on Twitter the time.
All the time. And you know what? Here's the thing. When you're a kid, when you're a 15-year-old boy, you're not saying things necessarily that you believe. You're saying them because you know you can get a rise out of people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because
it's just antagonizing.
When you're a 15-year-old boy, you don't know what you believe.
Right.
You don't know what you believe.
And it's not hatred. I mean, it could be, you know. Right. I saw it. I saw Jeff, what's his name, Bowers, and the way he was, you know, beating up on those other kids. And he had real hatred in his heart. So Stephen King tells the truth. But for the most part,
yeah, mostly
kids are just saying things that...
Yeah, you can go back and find any insensitive joke from a kid at 15 years old. It's usually made because they think it's going to piss a bunch of people off. It's not made because they have a deep-seated
ideology.
It's just like, I'm not supposed to say? Let me say that.
Right. And when you're young, especially with comedy, when you're young...
You don't cut funny.
You don't cut funny.
That was literally our theme, really, for the show back in the day.
You don't cut funny. Is it funny? Don't cut it. But it's really offensive. Is it funny? Yes, don't cut funny.
You can't go that, with that
was
anymore.
That was the first thing I told everybody that came to work for me on the show. Don't cut funny. You leave it in. Don't cut funny. Now, if it's not funny, you know, we didn't invent, you know, the clapter. That hadn't been invented yet. Like, not funny, but I'm laughing in approval. Now, I mean, how are our kids going to survive?
The only hope is saturation, I think, for kids today.
Yeah,
I mean, think about it this way. I was reading, going back through, we were talking about history yesterday, and I was clicking around through a bunch of stories and went down some wormhole, and there was a story about Dan Quayle. And Dan Quayle, they actually found the Potato Kid recently. Do you know this? They found the Potato Kid.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they found the Potato Kid.
wait. For anybody who doesn't know this story, he's a child that Dan Quayle had kept in a dark box underneath his refrigerator sink with the potatoes. It was a horrible,
horrible thing when we found this out. And it was initially because Dan Quayle impregnated a potato.
Right.
So it was a very strange story.
But the potato has a lot of eyes, and he couldn't take the way the potato was looking at him. But that's a different story.
Yeah, there's a lot of justice justification right. for what he did, and we're not going to get into it now. But so he, if you remember, of course, he went up and the kid spelled the word potato correctly, and he added on the E. And then there was a back and forth about how it used to
be
spelled.
By the way, it used to be spelled that way.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there's a long story. But, I mean, it basically, I mean, Quayle made the point, essentially, that it ruined his life.
Yeah,
I mean,
it certainly ruined his career.
Mm-hmm. And was a, it really dramatically affected his life in a terrible way. We have politicians that misspell words 100 times a day on Twitter, mm-hmm. and no one even bothers noticing, right? At some point, there's a saturation of these things where people just don't care anymore, and maybe we'll get to that point with our kids. They all have so much crap on their back. They've all said so many offensive things on Twitter over the years
that,
that
you can't hire anybody.
Right, yeah, so no one cares.
Unless it's the algorithm that does it. If it's the algorithm and the algorithm has been written by somebody who has an agenda, it will only silence those people. It's doing it now. We're doing it in real time.
Yeah, just
it's only
on
silencing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for instance, let's take this. You want to talk about saturation. The saturation of the story 2 years ago that Planned Parenthood was selling body parts. Okay. Everybody was talking about it. And what did the media say? Not true. Not true. This is made up. That's edited videos. Blah, 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 blah. Right.
Mm hmm.
Now we have Planned Parenthood admitting in a court of law and the people that were procuring it admitting under oath that, yes, they were selling them. And the company that was procuring them testified that they were taking beating hearts out of intact bodies. So the child was born and killed after birth. That's now under oath in a court of law. Nobody's talking about it.
Nobody cares.
Because it's kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah, we missed that boat.
Yeah, it's
I'm not going to get back
so
on it now.
Ago. Yeah, you're not going to get on it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just saturate it with something, when it turns out to be true, it doesn't matter. Caliphate.
Yeah.
Yeah. You that sat too. There getting beat up for 3 years about how a caliphate might be
and
coming.
And then all of a sudden there was a caliphate.
And there was a caliphate. And then like the New York Times just starts a podcast called Caliphate.
I know.
Like these people are out there criticizing you like crazy for
was
years.
A
and they're like,
crazy conspiracy theorist. All
and
of
then
these
they go
things.
Make all this money on a...
Right. I know. But that's what happens.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what happens.
Yeah.
So,
also, I was reading an article the other day that was titled... Dave Chappelle will save the nation. And I when I read it, I thought, yeah, you know what? If he survives this, he might save the nation.
Have you seen Nick DiPaolo?
No.
Nick DiPaolo is not on Netflix. I mean, he wrote for Chris Rock. The guy is really, really funny.
And one of those comedians that all those guys respect and admire.
Jon Stewart on his last show. Said, this was a joy, and I can't wait to go back and be on stage with people like Nick DiPaolo. And he named another comedian, two comedians. So, I mean, Nick is really, really good, but he's not doing, the Netflix special because he's on the other side. But he is, what's his name? Chappelle is politically incorrect.
Yeah.
Go on YouTube and look for Nick DiPaolo.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like I watched him and I'm like, how is he getting away with? He's coming up in a few minutes. How is he getting away with saying all of these things? And it's because he's funny. He's very, very funny.
And you don't cut funny.
Right. And I think we're at that point to where people don't care anymore. They're starting to.
I've never seen a funnier routine than Dave Chappelle's. I mean, that is an hour and 10 minutes of just absolute brilliance.
And Netflix does take some chances with this stuff.
Yeah, they do. And he's not really, I wouldn't call that a left-wing routine either. Because every time you think he's going there, there's a little twist.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
it hits both sides.
But
so,
yeah. But it's also not a right-wing routine.
No, like people, it's not at all.
I think people, mm-hmm. conservatives are like, oh, well, finally someone's saying some conservative things. Really, he's
not
just
really.
Making observations about the world and not caring which side it falls on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that is like, it's mm-hmm. a superpower these days.
It is.
I mean, Bill Burr has a special up there now, which is getting the same type of buzz as the Chappelle one. They just launched it.
I'll tell you, there is a chance that comedy
saves the country.
Saves the country.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it there is that possibility. We lost all sense of humor, and, you know, we've talked about it for years. How do you write something crazier than what's happening? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the observations that no one is willing to say anymore that are true and funny.
Because it used to be, if you were joking about something, you were kind of let off the hook, right? You didn't lose your job if you were joking about something, and clearly people knew you were joking about it. Well, that doesn't apply anymore at all.
The T-shirt
at all.
LAPD treats you like that's a joke.
That's clearly not serious.
No one should get fired for that,
right?
Particularly, I mean, I guess if she was the police commissioner today, maybe it would be a bad
idea. She was wearing it today.
25 years ago.
Right. I'm meeting with the police commissioners in Los Angeles, and I thought I'd wear this T-shirt to greet them. That might be a problem.
Yeah, not a good idea.
Thanks, Matt.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and I want to tell you about something that you should either end your day with or start your morning with, and that is The News and Why It Matters. If you like this show, you're going to love The News and Why It Matters. It's a bunch of us that all get together at the end of the day and just talk about the stories that matter to you and your life. The News and Why It Matters. Look for it now wherever you download your favorite podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, from the comfort, I believe, of his own home in Georgia, it's Nick DiPaolo. How are you?
Not my home. I have an actual studio.
You have an actual studio.
I'm doing very well. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. So,
Glenn, can I?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Your physical appearance since O'Reilly days has. I love it. You got the white hair, the goatee. Mm. Let me just hear you say, "Come down to KFC and try a cheddar biscuit."
It's really horrible. My family has white hair from very young. My sister started getting theirs at 30. I was the last to get it, and I always wanted it because my grandfather had it. But I've turned into my grandfather, and if that's not bad enough, I do look exactly like Colonel Sanders. It's not cool. It's not popular with the women.
Well, the white shirt and the black tie is not helping. I mean, put a bolo tie on there.
Right. Okay. All right.
As you have pointed out, Glenn, though, you are fatter than Colonel Sanders.
Yeah, when I actually looked at a picture of Colonel Sanders, I am in worse shape than the guy who is selling fried chicken out of the trunk of his car.
Yeah, but he does P90X three times a week.
How you doing, Nick?
I'm doing good. How you doing? You look good.
I didn't
mean that.
No, sure, you didn't mean it that way. So, Nick, let me ask you. Tonight is the Democratic debate in Houston.
It's tonight.
It's tonight. Going up against football. Gee, I wonder who's going to win in the ratings. What are your thoughts on Joe Biden?
Well, he's Joe Biden's out of his mind, and he has no business. He has no business being in the race. I mean, I can't believe he's still in the lead.
Yeah.
This guy, you saw him. He doesn't even know what state he's in. I love here coming to New Hampshire. This is one of the most beautiful states. Just look around the Rocky Mountains. You got the Smoky Mountains, and I'll tell you, I love Denver. I can't believe.
But is he the guy that is doing well just because everybody else is nuts? I mean, go through them.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders.
Well, he's a Jew living in Vermont. Do I have to say any more?
I don't know what that means exactly.
Well, he hates the 1%. Everything 1%. They're getting all the tax breaks. They're getting all the money. I hate 1% milk. I graduated top 1% of my class. I don't like that. And why do you live in Vermont, Bernie? Well, I love Subarus. I love women in flannel. I love covered bridges, and health care. He's first of all, he talks like me. I'm from Boston. He puts R's on words I'll have a vodka and tonic, and I have to head. I'll be touring in Nebraska and the butter and damn it, I wrote the bill. Damn it, I like his spunk. I got to be honest with you. I like he's his politics. Forget about it. You made a good point though. They're so far left, and if I was Bernie, I'd be PO'd because Liz Warren is just, you know, rehashing his ideas. He had the nerve to come out and admit he was a socialist, and now she's just trying to steal his thunder.
No R's in the word where there should be R's.
Yes.
And adding them where they don't exist.
That's what Brooklyn people do and Boston people. Go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I have 12 cups of coffee in me. How about the fact that he doesn't understand money? He says, I don't understand why we can't pay teachers like ball players. We do. We pay them like double-A ball players. $50 stipend. But, I mean, he doesn't understand that. Hey, Bernie, let me explain it to you. When you can get 20 million people to tune in to a science teacher rubbing a balloon on a kid's cardigan to teach electricity and then sell 12,000 beers at 10 bucks a pop, and then we can pay him. Look. There's only one type of teacher who should get paid like a pro ball player, and that's the young female teachers who sleep with their 14-year-old boy students. I will actually represent them in arbitration. I'll go right into the principal's office and say, Mrs. Johnson deserves another $200,000 this year. Well, why is that? Well, she slept with half the basketball team last month, and look at her numbers. She's having a great year.
I don't think that's helpful. I don't think that's helpful. What do you make of Pete Buttigieg?
I hate him more than Hillary. That's all I have to say about that. This guy is a smarmy little sanctimonious, holier than thou. I can't stand this guy. And he's on this whole, I mean, he passes himself off as this, you know, religious whatever. And now he's quoting the Bible. He says, climate change is a sin, he says. So what are you going to go into the confessional? Bless me, Father, if I have sinned. I have sexual thoughts about my neighbor's wife. I murdered a person 20 years ago, and I am not using paper straws. Damn it.
I was just in Los Angeles last week, and they handed, I asked for a straw. They don't even give you a plastic straw. I mean, they have to ask for it. And then they reward you with this paper straw that I hated those when they were passing out milk when I was in school. They're horrible. They're horrible.
You want me to believe that Hollywood stars are snorting coke with paper straws? I mean, come on. Matthew McConaughey has 19 paper cuts in his left sinus. Come on. It's all baloney. Just don't get rid of the crazy straws. That's all I ask.
There's a couple of things that I saw today. There was a story about a 77-year-old guy who's being released from prison because Trump has said, this is ridiculous. He was digging a trench around his property because he was afraid of fires. And he dug a trench and he kind of made a little moat. He took a 2-foot stream and channeled it in so that water was around his property, and the EPA threw him in jail. He's 77. Threw him in jail.
I didn't know Bernie owned a shovel.
Yeah. Yes. Well, and he's not in jail. But Trump has just let him out. And now, while that's good, now the EPA is saying that they want to eliminate all animal testing.
Look, I said this on a special years ago. I said, as far as animal testing, if hooking a monkey's brain up to a car battery is going to save somebody from dying of AIDS, I have two things to say. The red is positive and the black is negative. Okay? If you don't want to use animals, let's replace the animals with career politicians. Let's pump some chemicals and solvent into Gerald Nadler and see how he does after a week. Are you smoking, Glenn?
No, I am.
He just reacts like normal human beings do when they walk up a bunch of stairs when he laughs. Like, that's the physical activity.
This is quite a workout for me. All right.
It sounds like you have tuberculosis. Yeah. You've been hanging out on the Mexican border?
I have been. I live in Texas now. By the way, you moved to Georgia.
Yeah.
How do you like it?
I love it down here. I moved to a very red state. And first thing I did when I got down here, I wanted to be Southern, so I bought a handgun and I put it on my lap and I went through Chick-fil-A drive-thru. I thought I was going to scare the person in the window. It didn't even faze them. They're like, what do you got? What's that, a 38 snub nose? That's a 642 lightweight, ain't it? Yeah, I shot my stepdad with that. He's trying to mess around my sister on the 4th of July. And I'm like, that's a nice story, Diane. Anyways, can I get some ketchup?
How many shows a year do you do, Nick? How often are you out on the road?
Not as much as I used to be, Glenn. And that's the whole idea. I just hate the road, you know. So I used to do 30, 35 weeks a year when I was, you know, young and single and chasing women. And it was fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, but after your eighth time back to Cleveland, you know, how many times can you visit the Bowling Hall of Fame? And so I don't know, probably around 15 weekends or
so. Have you been affected by this quashing of comedy over the last 10, 15 years?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I'm sure I didn't do myself any favors, like landing gigs as far as TV and actual Hollywood show business. That's the thing, you don't know.
Yeah.
But as far as live performances, I came out of the closet as a righty on Tough Crowd in like 2002. I was, you know, I was spewing the term cultural Marxism on that show, which was a brilliant idea by me. I have $11 in the bank. I'm on national TV. You know what I mean? Everybody gives Dennis Miller and Schwarzenegger credit for being righties. I'm like, yeah, well, they had $70 million in the bank when they. Yeah. So I got pigeonholed as a conservative. I'm not. I'm a comedian who happens to lean right and is in. So people came out and thank God Trump came along. So, you know, but yes and no, a few people walk out of my shows all the time.
Well, it may not be for your politics. I mean, you are
my clothing.
Yeah. I mean, you say everything. You say everything. Let me ask you what your thought is on the Dave Chappelle special.
I absolutely loved it. Dave Chappelle, and I've said this, okay, and I know him. I like him as a person. I honestly don't think Richard Pryor or Chris Rock have anything on Dave Chappelle. I think he's a genius.
And you've written for Chris Rock.
I wrote for Chris Rock. And Chappelle is just, he's like a jazz musician. He's smooth.
Yeah.
He's smart. He's concise. That being said, my only problem is people are coming out there and people on my side going, he's fearless. Well, first of all, he's a famous black guy with $100 million in the bank. What's he got to lose? I'm fearless. I'm a 57-year-old white guy. I've been saying this stuff forever. That's why I'm doing a show in the back of an Applebee's right now. You know. But that special was tremendous, and I'm glad somebody that's famous and has that many people watching got the message. But I've been preaching that, and if you watch my special, Breath of Fresh Air, I touched on basically the same things Dave Chappelle did. His came out a few months after mine. We touched on the same subjects. People should put them side by side and go, and this is how it is for a white guy. So I just don't like that they're going, oh, he's fearless. A famous black guy in show business has never gotten in trouble for anything other than OJ in a couple extreme cases. But I mean, he's not going to get trouble for anything he says. And
so you don't think this, because he has gotten pushback.
Yeah, pushback's one thing, but being canned or being, you know, put under the radar for the rest of your showbiz career is another thing. And that's never going to happen to Chappelle. I use this example. Remember Tracy Morgan? His wife was pregnant. He actually came out and said, if my baby's gay, I'm going to kill it. He actually said that. And, you know, 6 months later, he has a new series on TBS. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Tell me a white guy that could say something that outrageous and not be banned from the planet. So but he's a genius. Chappelle's a genius, and he's in my top five easy. And I suggest everybody watch that special, but then watch mine. And I'm not comparing myself to him as a comedian because he's tremendous. But you know, you're going to see the point of view from a white, straight, 57-year-old white guy. And he has a little more leeway to say stuff than I do, even though I cut loose.
You do cut loose. He is, you know, I think he's being, people are assigning things to him that he didn't necessarily say. His jokes, many of them take you a minute before you say, wait a minute, did he say that or did he say this? He's making a point, but you can't really pin him down. He's just willing to say things. But I wouldn't say that he's, for instance, you know, pro-life, but I don't know that he's pro-abortion either. I don't know where he stands, which I think is part of the genius of the way he wrote this. Do you agree with this or not?
Yeah, I do. It's funny you say that because the next hour I'm working on, I have about 10 minutes on abortion, and you won't know where I stand either. You know, I can't say people assume I'm pro-life because I lean right in my politics. But I'd be a hypocrite to say that because when I was young, I got a few girls pregnant and I was glad to have Planned Parenthoods or I don't know, Midas Mufflers. I can't remember. They used to do that stuff.
Beautifully put, Nick. Beautifully put.
I have like, get her up on the jack. I have no.
He's playing at the Vatican next week. Just get your tickets now.
But you're right. He sort of has the Michael Jordan. Remember Michael Jordan's quote? They said, why don't you ever talk politics? And he says, because both Republicans and Democrats buy sneakers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of Chappelle sort of. But I don't think he's doing that intentionally. I mean, that's how he thinks. He's looking at both sides fairly. And you don't see that from too many comics. And that was the genius of it. That you, like you said, you could pin him down. And it's really funny on top of that.
And look, Netflix is Netflix. But let's not downplay the success of A Breath of Fresh Air. I mean, you're up 800,000 views now on YouTube. You can watch it for free. I mean, it's done really well. People have a thirst for this right now.
That's exactly right. They do have a thirst for it. I'm lucky Trump came along. Because I'm brutally honest about it.
So wait. Is it Trump or is it that people are starting to see the effects in their own life? You know, everybody wants to be nice. You know, hey, don't say that. They're handicapped. It makes them feel bad. Okay, I don't want to. But then you get to a point to where you're like, shut up. This is affecting my life. There's a 6'4" guy in a dress that's now wrestling my daughter in female wrestling. Shut up. And so I think they're just, this has played out long enough to where people are seeing it affect their own life in a negative way.
Well, that's some of it. But when Trump, look, this is when again, folks, keep this in context. I'm a comedian. I have a much darker sense of humor than you do. But this is what I swear to God, when I said I'm going to vote for Trump, and I'm laying on the couch. I'm half asleep. I got one eye open. Remember he went after the physically challenged reporter for the New York?
Yes.
I look over the TV and I see Trump go, and I said, where do I pull the lever? This guy does not give a crap. This is my guy. And you know what? He's been great for me because he's calling the media out on the PC bull crap. And yes, like you said, just through the way things are evolving, people have had enough. But I love that he would say anything. I'm watching him do a rally the other day, and they throw a heckler out. And as they're throwing the guy out, Trump goes, that guy has a weight problem. Go home and exercise.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Sujo John is his name. He's a 9/11 survivor and a founder of something called You Can Free Us. He has an amazing story. Welcome, Sujo. How are you?
Great, Ben. Good to be back with you.
I want to take the radio audience through your story a bit. First of all, you were living in India, and had moving to America always been a part of your plan or your dream? And if so, why?
Great question. A lot of reasons the why. America, you know, even for those from halfway around the world, America always stands out as this amazing place where dreams and dreamers collide. And if you have a dream somewhere within you in some part of the world, everybody wants to come to this country. And that was part of me. And my view of America was through the lenses of television, movies, and arts. And then growing up in India, where, you know, as Christians, you're a minority, I just knew that America is that place that's been founded on Judeo-Christian principles. So that was another big reason why I wanted to come here. And everything that America stands for is very appealing and drawing to people on the other side of the world where they want to build their dreams. And in this country, it's not about your pedigree. It's not about your last name. If you can add value, you can make something out of your life in this country. I don't think there's any country in the world that provides that foundation, Glenn.
it's so good to hear this from people who actually know, because we have lost our way so far. We don't see the uniqueness of America when you're living in it. So you come to the United States in February of 2001, and you find yourself a pretty good job. You are working on what floor of the World Trade Center?
So, Glenn, I came with $50, two bags, and tell people, loaded with a lot of dreams, and of all the places I find work, on the 81st floor of the North Tower of the World Trade Center.
And what are you doing?
I'm doing marketing for a telecommunications company. My dream was to start actually a data center to get into the telecom world. And so I was building my steps towards that and trying to understand what life is all about in America. What does true capitalism mean? Because growing up in India, you know, although they believe in capitalism, it's not quite a capitalist economy. And I was just so excited to come to the, of all the places, New York City, I mean, almost like the nuclear reactor of capitalism around the world that has created the wealth, which not only helps people have a better life, but solves problems around the world. So that was my goal. And my wife also works there. She was working on the 71st floor of the South Tower of the World Trade Center. So both of us had offices at the World Trade Center.
And she was pregnant.
She was 4 months pregnant, Glenn, and that was an exciting season in our life as we are getting ready for our baby to arrive, our first child. And then life takes such an incredible turn on September 11, 2001.
And you feel like on September 11th, you're there. What time in the morning did you get there?
I got a little past 7:30 that morning. I would start work usually a little earlier, around 8. So I was early that morning, 7:30. And Glenn, you lived in New York. You remember it was a clear, cloudless day.
Beautiful.
It was just a beautiful day.
Yeah.
And then everything would change forever.
So you're there, and you, before the plane hits, just literally a few minutes before it hits, you sent an email to a friend who went to church with you.
Yes. You know, I was, like you mentioned earlier, I was empty on the inside. You know, then you know this, and a lot of people listening to you know this. Life is not just about consumption. And sometimes we get wrapped up in stuff, junk. I call it the junk and the funk around us. And we think life is all about the next new thing, the next new toy, the next new gadget. And sadly, that was me in America. I could reach things that money could get. But then there was a hole in my heart, and I knew my purpose for which God sent me to this great land was not just to make money. There's something more. And I felt like I was almost losing that. I was losing that mission, losing the plot. So I wrote an email to my friend saying, I know there's a call of God upon my life. I've been chasing stuff in America. I want to be chasing that which is on God's heart. And I sent that at 8:05 in the morning from the Twin Towers.
You don't know that your wife is running late, if I remember right, and not in her office. Which tower was hit first, hers or yours?
My tower was hit first. The North Tower was hit first. This incredible explosion that almost rips the building. American Flight 11, a Boeing 767 with 440 flying at 440 miles an hour, carrying 10,000 gallons of jet fuel.
And how many floors above you was it?
The plane literally struck about eight, nine floors above us, but part of the wing of the plane rips through our floor. As everyone who's seen those images, they would know that the plane went in an angle into the building.
Yeah.
So there was fire that got started around us as jet fuel dumps its way all throughout the building.
And did you see the plane coming toward the building?
I didn't see the plane, but someone on my floor saw the plane. Everything happened so fast, but we felt this incredible explosion, the building rattling. And we knew it was a plane. What else could hit you at that height? But all of us, Glenn, thought it was a small commuter plane, probably a pilot, had a cardiac problem or something,
right.
And crashed the plane. Nobody knew it was a big jet plane, and nobody knew that it was actually a terrorist attack, that it was intentionally flown into the building.
So did you start to get out then?
Yeah, we fought our way to the fire and the jet fuel and started running down. And that's when I passed all these brave firemen and policemen, these incredibly brave men and heroes of our country. We were going down and they were going up. So we high-fived them saying, you guys are the real heroes. We had no idea that would be the last time America would be seeing these brave men. So we started running down, and I'm running down with a very heavy heart. Phones aren't working. I can't reach my wife. So I come down 81 floors. I reach the plaza level. And from there, we were told, go down one more level to the concourse level. And I'm walking toward the South Tower to be looking for my wife if she has now gone up. And that's when the South Tower collapses around me.
Wow. And so it, I mean, I would imagine it was a little terrifying with everything falling around you that you felt like you might get hit by things? Or were you far enough away?
No, I was actually almost right in front of the building. And it's an amazing story of God's deliverance. I'm 20 feet away from the building. I made my way to the revolving doors of the towers that take you literally in front there. And that's when the ground starts shaking, the glass is shattering. And I'm with 15, 20 people, and we started crying out. And we were on top of each other, and I started preparing them. I told them we're going to die, and I told them, call upon the name of Jesus. We knew time was short, and we started praying our last prayer, thinking we were going to die. So I was buried in that debris at that moment. I was in about a pocket of about 3 feet of soot and ash. The steel was the only thing that really survived. Everything was pulverized into ash and dust. And the first building, when it got when it came down, the front facade of the building stood up for a while. And I was right there. So that's probably what saved my life. And everything went as if, in a way a mushroom is. It just went past us. So that protected me. But then I was buried in debris, and I was pulled out by a man, an incredibly brave FBI agent. And as he pulled me and I pulled him, we both told each other we're going to die. He said he was the FBI. And I told him, do you know where you're going? He said, yes, I know my savior. And we thought we were going to die, choking all the soot on the ash. And that's when a red light flashes, and we start crawling away, and that light leads us out of the pit. The man says, I got to go back, runs into the North Tower, which was still standing. The ground shakes. The North Tower goes down. This brave American hero died that day.
Do you know his name?
Yeah, his name is Lenny Hayden, who was left behind 4 children. He was a bomb technician for the FBI. Actually the only active FBI agent to have died that day. Just his story is just incredible. I've had an opportunity to meet his wife and just to know about his life. Another story of another man who could have avoided that place, but he felt so driven by love for his country and fellow human beings and the call of duty that just made him race and run back into the towers to look for more people. And Glenn, I just want to say something here. That's what makes America great. When people talk about make America great, I say the people of America great. Mm-hmm. It's not our money. It's not our building. It's not our technology. The fact that there are people that are willing to love on their neighbor, there are people that care for this country. And I've heard you, I've seen you on television, met you in person, and I know beyond what you do in the media, it's a true love that you have for America that makes people like you speak up on issues. People that want to protect this country, knowing what's about to happen. And for me, who's come from India, that's what I love about America, the great American spirit that's deeply entrenched in everyone that calls himself an American.
So, Joe, I'm going to take a 1 minute break, and then I'm going to come back. And I want you to tell people what happened afterwards, because that was a big change in your life. The ground shook, literally and figuratively, and you have gone on to do some remarkable things. And I want to hear the second part of your life now. You know, Sujo and I were talking yesterday. He was on television, so we were talking just the other day about the thing that he's working on. And we both believe that the only way that we're going to save this nation and save freedom of mankind is if we put into action the things and really the covenant that our pilgrims and George Washington and Abraham Lincoln made with God. And that is, we will serve you. And the best way to serve God, as Benjamin Franklin said, was to serve your fellow man. The one thing that we can all agree on now, and not argue about, is slavery is horrible and needs to be stopped. And it's worse today than it's ever been. So here's this guy who's chasing the almighty dollar in the World Trade Center. They come down, and Sujo, you believe that you were directed and saved, you and your wife saved that day to be able to do something different than just making money.
Absolutely, Glenn. And I felt God calling me into this. And the fact that I was rescued, that someone who rescued me gave up his life. And that's the story of the gospel narrative. God sends his son to look for broken people like us. And the fact that heaven rescued you and me compels us, our faith compels us to look for people. And the message of Jesus was, he came to set the captives free. And there are people spiritually captive, and there's also physically captive. So I got exposed to this problem, Glenn, about modern slavery, how there's 41 million people in slavery. And when I saw the conditions, and I know you've seen it in different parts of the world, where women are kept in cells and cages. Mm-hmm. I remember being in a red light district, 37,000 sex workers, and women kept in these cages 3 feet by 6 feet. I felt in that moment something common with those girls. I felt like I know what it is to be trapped. And if someone came and rescued me, perhaps God is tapping on me to rescue these women and children on his behalf. And I saw that in India, and I come back, and I knew America is a place where people are generous. And I came and started talking about this problem, and we started this nonprofit called Youth Can Free Us. And this has become my life calling. This has become my mission. And this is a problem in America. It's a problem in the Middle East. It's a problem in Asia, a global problem, every zip code. Our children are vulnerable. And so that's been our mission, looking for women and children who are trapped in sex slavery. But beyond sex slavery, children also trapped in labor trafficking. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited. You have a passion, Glenn, with Nazarene Fund and what you've done in helping Christians flee from war-torn countries where they're under the threat of ISIS. And I'm so excited that we get an opportunity to talk about this and also work in the future on a problem that is one of the greatest evils of our times. Yeah. If we don't engage right now in this problem, a generation that's coming up behind us will say, why did you not do enough? I want to share something with you. You also may have been in these places around the world. There have been horrors of the past. I remember being in Elmara Castle in Ghana, and they tell you about the slave trade. I've been in places where Hitler ran wild and wiped out millions of Jews. And we stand in those places and we question and we ask, why did people not do enough? And so this is our problem in our world, and we've got to do whatever we can. There is a cry rising from the brothels of the world. There is a cry rising from children and women. And the question is, are we listening to that cry?
You know, it's amazing to me. The New York Times just started selling something called 1619. And it's a podcast, a serial that they're doing on the year 1619. They say that's the year of really America's founding, because that's when slavery was brought here. But our pilgrims came in 1620, and it's the 400th anniversary of our pilgrims the year after. You can either look back and blame everything on that, and I don't know what you're gaining out of that except more anger and frustration, and you're not lifting anybody up. Instead, we should be looking towards today. Because I can't do anything to change what people did in the past, but I don't want to be remembered as the people in the past that did nothing and were, you know, involved in cakes and circuses. And this problem is real. And if we can come together and solve the problem today, it will solve the problems of the past. It will heal those wounds.
So well said. And I want to say something. It may not be politically correct. I just want to tell your listeners that's listening to you, listening to us, Glenn, right now, don't get discouraged when liberals beat you about the problem of slavery of the past. If those people care so much about things that happened in the past, I want to encourage them. Come join people like us in the fight of this problem that's happening right now. I don't know of any country in the world, Glenn, that has shed its blood on the issue of slavery. I looked up the numbers the other day. It's almost 600,000 people, under a million Americans got killed in the Civil War. So America's paid the price with blood on this issue of slavery, and as we all aware of, and somehow this history is not being passed down, and there are people who come up and talk about the past and say we have to get involved in repatriations for a small group of people that caused this problem that was a global problem. But how about a problem right now in our streets? How about a problem right now around the world when you and I and everyone who cares about this problem, right or left, can be part of a great solution.
Thank you, Sujo. Sujo John, I encourage you to check out his organization and help where you can. It's youcanfree.us, youcanfree.us. Check him out and join the fight. Join the growing numbers of people who are saying, you know what, let's deal with real problems.
The Blaze Radio Network.
on demand.